Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone. It's Back Sports Page Live presents The Windup. I'm Brendan Azoff. With me, as always, is Stefan Rosner. And today, we are live on air to talk about the Yankees, Mets, and other things going on around the MLB. How you doing today, Stefan?
I'm good. How are you? How was your vacation?
It was all right. You know, could have been a little better. Beautiful place, Curaçao is. But, you know, we're back now, ready to talk baseball. Exciting week around the MLB. We can kick things off with the Yankees, right? Who are now tied for first in the American League with the Houston Astros after taking 2 out of 3 in LA. And they made the Dodgers look silly. You know, they beat their best pitcher, Ryu, in the first game of the series, put up 7 against him. And they took Kershaw deep 3 times in the win in Game 3 of the series on Sunday night on ESPN and showcased their power to the rest of the MLB.
Yeah, it was definitely a fun series with the Dodgers series. Obviously, go back to Oakland real quick. And that the Oakland series just was not good at all. You just talked about how the pitching was awful. But they did rebound against a great Dodgers team. And if this is their World Series matchup, this is going to be a fun one.
Yeah, I would agree. And we talked about the importance of home field advantage for the Yankees. And when you consider that taking 2 out of 3 gives them the head-to-head advantage against the Dodgers, that's a big turning point for their case at a World Series berth. And now they turn their focus to Houston. You know, you got to take care of your business. And now you start the standings watch and hope that Houston can fall down a little bit because they're hot as hell, too.
I want to talk about Aaron Judge for a little bit right now.
Yeah, let's go on to it.
So, you know, obviously, major slump was being questioned if he was actually, this is the type of player he's going to be, someone who hits low average, not as powerful as he was his first few years, because pitchers obviously figuring him out. They're throwing that low strike. He's swinging it crap. But over his last 7 games, he's batting .333. He's got 4 homers, 6 RBIs. He has struck out 11 times, but right now it's either a home run or a strikeout, and that's what MLB has become. But what's a good thing is, you go back to the Oakland series when he hit a home run off Joaquin Soria on August 22nd for his first homer to left field the entire season, which is mind-boggling, but he just missed the inning and he pulls the ball. But then in against the Dodgers, I'm pretty sure he hit one dead center field.
Yeah, I mean, and he hit it to right center field, which is, if you remember his first year, that was his power source. He would pull the ball, and then he was still able to go to right. And this year, we all like, you know, the fact that he can go the other way and that he's one of the few power hitters that doesn't get shifted because of his ability to do that. But at the same time, every batter's power is to their pull side, and the fact that he wasn't getting around on baseballs was troubling. So, I mean, now he's got 2 or 3 homers now to left field. And even though he's starting to pull the ball, he was still able to go dead center, more towards right center. And it was like a 404-foot home run. So he still got that power. And we were talking about how he was a little far away from the plate. It looked like he was swinging over the top of the outside pitches, especially the sliders away, which has always been a trouble pitch for him because he's so tall. But now he kind of closed up the stance and he moved a little bit closer to the plate, and you can see that now he's getting around on the baseball. So hopefully these adjustments are something that he can continue to make throughout his career, because every player is going to go through struggles. And as long as he doesn't let it go out of the field and affect his defense, I think that's one of the more important things that will separate him from other players throughout the league.
Well, the question is, we've been talking about how stance, he was too far away from the plate, his legs, everything like that. Why is it taking this long for the hitting coach to do this? The same thing with the pitching. The pitching's been awful. Pitchers have been tipping their balls, and then Larry Rothschild finally comes out and he's like, oh, we're fixing this now. Why is it taking so long?
I think it's something that Marcus Thames probably did tell Judge and noticed, and they tried to work on it, but baseball players, you know, hockey players, all athletes are creatures of habit. So if you get into the box and you have that slight change, you don't feel comfortable with it yet, you're going to revert to your old habit. So he could have stepped in the box, you know, 2 weeks ago with that change, swung and missed, then goes, oh, maybe I don't like it, and, you know, just kept going back. But now that he hit that first full home run, you can see he gets up there and he naturally has that confidence again where pitchers are scared. And what I like most about his home run off Kershaw is that he swung and missed at a slider before that. And it was a low pitch, and he saw a hanger and drilled it. And if you're Aaron Judge, those are the pitches you can't miss. You're going to get them maybe once or twice a game if you're lucky. And if you miss those pitches, it's going to be an 0-for-4 night with strikeouts. So he's got to be able to capitalize on mistakes and make pitchers pay.
And it was good to see, too, he wasn't against a bad team. He stepped up against a very good team. And the thing with Judge and, you know, habit, anything could be said about Tanaka. You see him struggle all year with the splitter. And then we're talking about Elmer now with the fact that it's just like a batter changing his stance or changing the way he hits against the shift. Players come up, have a habit. You know, they're so eager not to change anything and just figure it out. Same with pitching. When they hold the ball, he's been pitching the same way for many, many years. And that, you tell him, you got to grip it differently. It's a hard thing to do when you revert back to your old habit all the time. So, I mean, Tanaka, he hasn't been good either.
I mean, he's been up and down because he had two great starts before his recent bummer in Oakland where, I mean, he went six innings, so he still gives them that depth, and he gave up five runs. But the way it started, it could have been a lot worse. He gave up three in the first. So I like the fact, personally, that he was able to shake off the first and give them another five innings, even though they wound up losing the game. I mean, that's the type of outing you need, especially at this point in the season, to save the bullpen, because those are your key arms come postseason. But for Tanaka, it's more of the fact that he's trying to yank the splitter now because he doesn't want him to get hit out. So when he does, he misses, and then he falls behind 2-0, 3-0, 3-1, and then he has to throw a fastball, and he throws 92 with no movement. So when he falls behind, he's going to hit. And, I mean, we see hitters in MLB now are getting around on 98, 99 consistently. So if you're missing with 92 down the middle, it's going to get hit out. I think that if he wants to improve, instead of throwing those first-pitch, you know, sliders, first-pitch sinkers, maybe dot the corner with the fastball and then revert to the off speed. We saw Paxton give up run after run of the first, and now he starts mixing in a curveball, and it's changed the way he pitched.
One of the top curveballs in the movement that he has.
And he was going away from that, throwing more fastball cutter combo, which is another thing that we could talk about with how Larry Rothschild obviously loved the cutter, and Sonny Gray talked about how it ruined him, and now look what he's doing in Cincinnati. Paxton started shaky in his Yankee career, and now reverted back to his curveball, and he looks like the pitcher they acquired. So, you know, hopefully Paxton leans on that. Hopefully Tanaka starts to get ahead of batters again. And if they do that, they'll have two solid pitchers, plus Domingo Germán, who, after getting roughed up in Oakland, gave up six runs, five were earned, over 5.1 innings. He did strike out seven, but again, he got plagued with the home run ball. But he bounced back in L.A. and put up a brilliant, you know, one-run performance last night.
Yeah, and if you want to talk about the Dodgers real quick, I forgot to mention my fun fact. Do you know Max Muncy played soccer throughout all of high school?
I did not.
Yeah, I just made it up. But the thing is that he, you can talk about that ninth inning call, that controversial call.
Yeah.
You got Brett Gardner going second on a forced play, right? He slides in. And then Max takes Max Muncy out, clean slide, and then towards his round third. And the ump said that they kind of called time while Max was on the ground. And Max went after the game and said he embellished it a bit. But you got to do what you got to do to win. And he took advantage of it. And the umpire was in their favor. There's no excuse for the Yankees, Toppin, and Sanchez striking out. But it happens.
Yeah, I mean, Toppin and Sanchez, they got to come through there. But, again, that does change the whole game. And even the fact that Torres was, you know, halfway to home plate when they called time and then sent him back. I remember playing Little League and they go, if you're halfway there, it's your base. You know, so it's tough and it's a tough one to swallow. I mean, I don't blame Max Muncy because he's doing his job there. You know, Gardner went in hard. It was clean because the throw from Turner did pull Muncy towards the runner. But he went down hard, you know, grabbed his leg, milked it a little bit. He got the team a win because the Yankees could easily flip that series. That run scores, you know. I think they're bullpen over the Dodgers the extra innings. So that changed the game. But I like how the Yankees were able to rebound, you know, shake it off. Maybe that motivated them a little more. And if they see the Dodgers in the World Series, they'll remember that. You know, they'll play for that. But I can't blame Max Muncy. I love the fact that Gardner went in hard, you know, the old-fashioned slide. So it was a fun, you know, exciting series, especially for Yankees fans. The 2 minutes that they had, but long.
Yeah, what I was going to say about that game was Max Muncy came out after and said, listen, it hurt. Like, it hurt a lot. Well, he did milk it and he got away with it. But also, the fact that why is it not a two-minute play? Like, I know it's the judgment of the officials, of the umpires, but with the world just becoming, you know, all sports, you can challenge pretty much everything now, besides obviously balls and strikes. This has to be something that the Yankees have to think about where in the future, that could be a World Series game.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I don't even think a challenge necessarily, just the umpire review it, because like in this situation, Torres was running home. So maybe they go, all right, we understand he was running home. We did send him back to third, but let's go look at how close he was to home plate when time was called. You know, because if Matt Muncy got up, he wouldn't have thrown him out anywhere from where Torres was. No. Torres was very heads up. As soon as Muncy hit the ground, he ran. So I don't know if you institute a challenge or just have, you know, it's like an eighth inning on, everything gets the view that's a close play or a judgment call. That way, because these umpires, you know, they're left on an island now, too. We all say, oh, terrible call, you can't do this. But they got a half a second to make a decision. So why don't you give them the benefit of the doubt and let them go back and correct their mistake if they can.
The whole point of replay is to get the call right. Not to, you know, tarnish anyone's ego to the close play first. Like, if you get the call right. So in a situation like that, there's no way the umpire said to the Yankees that he 100% didn't see him halfway or whatever it was. But
the umpire, he saw Muncy down, and their job is player safety. So he wanted to make sure Muncy was okay and just called time. But then, to your left, he got Torres 20 feet away from time.
If the umpire said, listen, I didn't see it, then that makes sense. But, okay, thanks for being honest. Let's review it. But if he goes, oh, he didn't score, like, there's no evidence for you to say that. You're not watching that play. You're watching something that's hurt. So, I don't know. I think it's foolish, but that's baseball.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you win some, you lose some. Matthew did start, he did four innings of two-run baseball, which honestly makes me believe more and more that him and Severino will be a combination in the games in the postseason. I think that Chad Green will be better off suited for the bullpen, especially in the postseason, especially if the starter gives a short start. We saw Hap do that last year against the Red Sox, and Severino has done that in the past. So I think that if you put Severino and Sabathia, you know, 2 to 3 innings each and then go to the bullpen, that might be the best way, because when it's said and done, Sabathia's still a veteran. He's still a guy that everyone respects and loves, and I think that he'll be able to shine a little bit more in the postseason, and I'd rather have him start. I cannot watch Jay Happ pitch in the game anymore. I think he's starting tonight, and if he gets rocked again, I don't know how you keep playing this on, you know. It's getting to that point where it's just ridiculous.
No, his stats are actually disgusting. It's brutal, and they're a player – like Chris Sale for the Red Sox, you know, and said this is the worst series ever had. He's embarrassed to take the mound. I mean, that's a pitcher that's been a star.
Yeah.
Has been a solid pitcher in his career. Solid. I'm not gonna say superstar. Solid. But to have the kind of year you're having right now, he's not. You can't put him out there. If the Yankees were in a playoff hunt right now, he's not. He's not.
Yeah, I mean, he's had a 5.58 ERA, and somehow he's 10-8. But
well, that's because the Yankees score runs.
Katie Sharp, I know she puts all these crazy stats out there. I saw something where he's like the second worst pitcher in terms of ERA among qualified starters. That's just ridiculous. So especially someone that came into the Yankee Stadium last year in the middle of a playoff race, a new setting, new team, and he looked great. You know, he was given quality start after quality start and was a big reason why they wound up getting to 100 wins. And then they give him this 2-year deal. He comes in, and he just forgot how to pitch. He can't get the ball inside to righties. And it's like he throws the inside pitch that he wants to go to righties to lefties, so then just take it out of the park. And, I mean, we always knew that he doesn't throw hard enough to really keep the ball inside the yard. But there's a difference between giving up home runs and then giving up 2 or 3 a game. His home run per 9 is atrocious. I don't have the number in front of me, but it's got to be up there among the worst. Also, I know that Aaron Sanchez before he went to Houston was up there. So maybe, you know, just giving half a couple of starts off, you know, it's like getting a regular everyday player. You just got to send a message to him that's unacceptable.
Well, he's been bad in his last. I mean, he's been bad all year. When his last 7 starts, minus the 1 loss, because the Yankees again score runs. He's got a 7.41 ERA in 34 innings, 43 hits, 28 earned runs. He struck out 29, but I mean, it's still just this is a team that needs pitching to step up. And we've seen Herman shaky over his last couple, but he stepped up and he was strong yesterday. You see Tanaka trying to figure it out. Paxton's figuring it out. Sabathia gave you pretty much exactly what you expect. And now it's just half because, like you said, you cannot put him out there. He's going to get lit up by every team, and you can't go down in games early. You see what happens with the Yankees. They're great coming back, but in the playoffs, it's a whole new animal, especially when you're going against the top pitchers like a Verlander or.
Yeah, I mean, you cut that rotation down to 4 pitchers, so you know that you're going to have him on there based on what he's done this year. You know that Tanaka is going to be there because of his, you know, season this year. A couple of starts against the Red Sox has been pretty good. His numbers in the postseason, it's like a sub-2 ERA, so he's going to be there. He'll probably be your number one starter. Then you have Paxton. He continues to pitch like this. You now feel comfortable with him. I mean, outside of the first inning, he's been pretty solid. So you hope that that first inning, you know, plague is behind him and that he can give you a solid start. And then you put the 4th game, Severino, Sabathia, and you got to like your chance. But if Paxton somehow gets a start, Hack gets a start in the playoffs, I don't even know if I'm going to watch.
I don't think you know what's going to happen. Right? He's on the roster.
You're not in a great lineup.
But what are you going to do? You have to not go into the bullpen. People are thinking he's going to come out and give you relief. No. I wouldn't trust. There's no reason for you. Your bullpen's a loop. Why are you adding another arm?
You don't put him on your playoff run.
I mean, so perhaps that's baseball. You step up and you play. You don't step up, you don't play.
Especially when you have Patantis, Severino coming back from injury. You have Betty Garcia potentially getting promoted. You have Stanton, who's going to come back. You have Hoyt's going to come back. You're going to have to lose some players from your roster.
Gracio, exactly.
So Hap's not going to get cut, but, I mean, he'll stay on the 40-man and then come playoffs when you have to shrink it down and submit your roster to the series. He's not going to be on it. He's not going to be able to pitch. But, you know, listen, he had 162 games. He's one of the few Yankees that stay healthy the whole year to prove himself worthy of that rotation spot in the playoffs. And he's not able to do it. I mean, you look at Jordan Montgomery, his first start in AAA looked very well. He gave up no one run, struck out a couple of batters. So, I mean, you could throw his name in the mix. You know, I don't think he's going to get back because of the amount of time he's missed, but you just cannot let Hap pitch in the postseason.
Yeah, but the good news, though, the Yankees do hit home runs.
Oh, yeah.
They broke a record for the most home runs in a given month. They hit 61 in August. They passed the Orioles in May 1987 and Mariners in May 1999, which both had 58. And on the season, the Yankees have 241 home runs, and then it's second in the league. Minnesota has 253, and they're on a pace to just break historical records.
Yeah, I mean, the Twins are going to break the Yankees' record last year was 264, I think. And they're 11 away from that. But then you look at the Yankees, and the Yankees are going to break it, too. So the Yankees are going to. Exactly. And the Twins had a bigger lead than that. So they're slowing down a little bit. So I'm interested to see if the Yankees can, you know, catch up once Boyd gets back, you know, and Encarnacion gets back. The Yankees have 241 home runs from, you know, players who you would not expect this from. So
I mean, 61 seems like a lot, but how many games do you think you play in a 30-day month? How many games do you think?
Well, usually you have baseball. The Yankees had a month now where they had maybe 2 or 3 days off. They had like 17 and 18 stretch, so that helps.
Let's say they played like 27 games. And they hit 60 home runs.
I mean, they're 2 a game.
Yeah. They're a little more than 2 games, which is expected, though.
They also played the Orioles how many times this month?
That's true.
I think they played them 7 times, so that helps a lot, too.
The Yankees hit home runs to win. I mean, not that.
We're not taking it away from them.
Yeah.
You still got to hit them.
Yeah, but just go to quick stats for pitching for the Yankees. We talked about how bad the starting rotation's been. Bullpen's been great, but starters have a 4.82 ERA, right? The team ERA is a 4.47, but that's obviously lower because it's 4.02. I think the bullpen would be better. But then you look at still Chad Green, he was in the bullpen start the year, Hurts, and I mean, their bullpen's.
Well, Chance Adams and Luis kind of killed that ERA. I mean, if you take the 2 or 3, like even Nestor Cortez, you take them out of it, and then you just look at the big names only, their ERA is sub 3 by a lot. Chapman, Ottavino, Hanley, they're all under 3. The slider was crazy.
I've never seen a ball move like that. And it gets stupid.
Yeah.
It's just that good.
And then Chapman came in a non-stay situation, first pitch slider for a strike. And whenever he throws that first pitch as off speed for a strike, you know he's going to get the job done.
He didn't have that. He did not throw that slider that much when he's in the Reds coming up.
No.
This is like a.
Yeah, well, I mean, his fastball velocity dropped from 102 to 98. So you got to compensate. Yeah, like he can still throw it for 101, 102, but he can't go above that anymore. So he's compensated with the slider. But
throws the hitters. Yeah, they're thinking fastball the whole time.
His worst enemy has always been himself. If he walks people, he's going to get in trouble. If he doesn't, very rarely do you see him go around through the hits. Most of the time, it's he walks the bases loaded and then gives up a hit. So if Chapman can control his fastball, control his slider, he's still one of the best closers, not the best closer in baseball.
So now you talk about Mets, and they've had a rough stretch of the way down there, amazing stretch. They've lost 5 or 6 against the Braves. They need to win at least because they need to catch that. I mean, not catch them, just winning because, you know, wild card. They got swept at home after sweeping Cleveland, and they're 2 games back. J.D. Davis, he's looking like one of the best.
I'm in the rough.
Yeah. We have 3 average, 44 RBI. We have a big ball club fan of Cleveland, the 10th. But for the Mets, they're great. And some of the difference between Mets pitching and the Yankees. The Yankees give you maybe 86 innings, that's as far as it goes. It's like every pitcher in the 7th inning. That's one because they don't trust them as much.
Exactly.
But, I mean, it's still something that's hard. Lifetime, you're going against some big pitchers in big rocks. Those guys have been stepping out lately. And with all the injuries, they still find themselves only 2 weeks back. So, when you talk at all, how they can make it, you think they can?
Yeah.
They definitely can, but now they've got to keep winning.
Yeah, I mean, the Mets team ERA is a 4.31, which is better than the Yankees team ERA. And that's with the amount of struggles that the bullpen has had this year. So, that just clearly shows how dominant their starters have been. DeGrom, you know, looks like same Cy Young form that he was last year, and he's making a late push to get that award again. Syndergaard has figured it out. You know, he was hovering with a 4 ERA, now it's back to a 3. Mats has been a pleasant surprise. Keeping Wheeler was great, and then you added Stroman. So that rotation it's legit, and it's probably one of the only reasons that they're in the position that they're in. But they were so hot for so long that you know every team comes back down there. You know, it's just humanly impossible to maintain that level of play. But they've still been able to win a couple of games. They swept Cleveland, who gave the Yankees trouble, so that was a big sweep. But then the Braves seem to be their Achilles heel this year, which is the same could be said for a lot of baseball. The Braves are top 5 team in the league. But you look at what the Mets have done, and they've made it exciting again for, you know, baseball in New York. It was just the Yankees that seemed this year, and Pete Alonso's historic season was kind of thrown by the wayside because of the struggles that they had as a team. But now they're relevant. And they still got a lot of time. They got probably 35, 40 games left where they can make that push, you know, and that big push at the end. They're only 2 games back. That's not that much. And you play the Phillies, you know, probably going to play the Nationals. So you got teams in front of you that you can beat and get back in the race. So.
They're
a big series against the Cubs,
who are in the spot. So that's a big series. I guess the Mets, the Braves are just a better team. And I have to give it their all, but. You know, it's just a better baseball team. I don't have as much to work with. Mets has been a great surprise. The Nationals are coming. They're on fire right now. And the Cubs are swept by the Nationals. We'll get to them a little bit, but I haven't had any long time to deal with that two matchups. So you think the Mets go in there as the Cubs out the last couple of games. Just push harder and harder to get the Cubs to go at least 7. The offense has been great. Rosario's been great. Like we said, players like are setting up. And that's guys in that community, Larry and Brandon comes, are these guys going to play? I wouldn't change it. Trevor Larry proves something. I mean, he has a little year.
He's a veteran that can hit, man.
Can you put him in second?
330 homers last year.
You're going to put him in second base. You got to play J.D. Davis.
No, J.D. Davis in the outfield.
I know, but you have
McNeil's in the outfield.
McNeil's in the outfield. So what do you do with him?
Well, I mean, you see how Joe Barry does in a couple of simulated games, rehab games, but that's somebody, even if you don't play him often, maybe you use him the way the Yankees thought they were going to use LeMahieu, where you give people days off, you spell him, especially in the stretch run, just to get him back. But again, the stretch run, not like they're not in the Yankees position where they can afford to rest people, you know? They got to win their game. But this is a guy that's proven he could hit and hit well in this league. He did in the American League, so, you know, maybe the switch over to the National League could affect him a little bit too. But Nimmo is somebody that he's like their spark plug. Everybody loves him there. He came out of nowhere last year, produced, and he struggled with injury this year. But that's also someone that maybe you put him in right field for McNeil and move McNeil back to the infield, which is a natural position, and then use Lowry as that platoon guy to spell people, maybe put him at third instead of Frazier if Frazier goes on another slump. But they have all these options they can use it. It's better to have all these pieces than not have them. So we'll see what they want to do.
What does Mickey Callaway go to? And I think with Cano, if he comes back, he's not going to play. You're paying him all this money, but he should just come off the bench. I wouldn't choose that. Especially if Joe Barry comes back and starts to hit, he's not Cano in there. And Cano's not doing better when he came back from injury. But, you know, he's hurt. So
listen, I bet you Mets fans would love a DH at this time.
Yeah,
in the lineup, even though their pitchers hit the best in the league, but I mean, that solves a lot of problems. You look at the Yankees, they have all these bats coming back. Where do they play? Well, one gets to play DH.
That's a good point.
The American League, I feel like, is more rested than the National League is at that point, because now you could put Judge DH. So he can solve his bat.
In the AL, especially when you're catching, like in Gary Sanchez, you don't have to put him behind the plate. More than qualified back, and he's a better defensive catcher anyway. And especially with everyone hurt, you're not taking out anyone at Sanchez and Diaz. But you go around the league a little bit. This weekend was the Players' Weekend jersey.
I'm shaking my head right now. Those were the most horrendous uniforms I think I've ever seen in any sport. First of all, you couldn't read the name on a white jersey, which kind of ruins the point of them having a nickname. They all looked like the Yankees. You couldn't see anything. And they had the white helmets on top of it. They looked like the Bix Whiteout that you'd buy at Walmart. I mean, that was atrocious that they did that. The Yankees in the black, you know, the black on black, I've always been a fan of. But come on.
How about an 85, 90 degree heat in LA? It's an all black.
Yeah, and you still got Chapman wearing the navy blue full turtleneck underneath it. But I mean, those jerseys, disgusting. Clayton Kershaw came out and said that he thinks this is the dumbest weekend of the year. He doesn't understand why they do it. And if they do it for the players, and the players are reacting like this, maybe they shouldn't do it anymore.
Because if they make jerseys, they could sell them more money. But Yankees lied about wearing them. They lied.
So
it was not for the sporty. That was his nickname. They changed it up a little bit. Somebody was one machine that came with something else.
It was Big Fundy.
Yeah. So
He said that he always puts DJ on the back. Similar to Gardner, who doesn't want to do it, so they just put their name. But they encouraged him to put Big Fundy. That was apparently his nickname in Colorado, and Ottavino brought it over to New York. So they called him Big Fundy, but I don't know. I just think that they should wear their regular jerseys, please, because this is ridiculous.
Or make them like cool jerseys. Don't make them, they don't think they just went up there. White, black, that's it.
Just wear your regular jersey. Come on,
I'd rather see the Yankees stripes anyway. So.
I'd rather see them in their road plays.
Yeah, no, exactly. They try. They only try. They fail.
Twice in a row they failed.
They should worry about review and not, the jerseys.
Yeah, last year they gave every team batting practice jerseys, and this year they gave them school supplies of the jerseys. So.
The relievers weren't or hats.
Yeah, I didn't get it all either. Because doesn't that ruin the whole – everybody else is going white on white, and the reliever goes black cap white. And we were talking about it. We were watching Joe Kelly come in, and I thought it was just him. We were like, he wore the wrong hat. And then you look around, and you're like, oh, all the relievers are wearing, the black. It just doesn't make sense, man.
On to the Astros. That team that was jumping well in their turnout right now. So, on top of the Yankees.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny to watch because you look at the Yankees go on this run and then they pull four games in front of Houston and you're like, okay, maybe it's the time they separate themselves. And the Yankees get swept. They lose four in a row and Houston comes back, wins 7-8. So now they're tied again. It seems like these two teams, no matter what type of hot streak they go on the rest of the year, will always counteract each other. And They're going to, one team's going to finish one game, you know, maybe two games up on the other. And it's going to be exciting. You saw it in 2017. We're going to see it again this year. If they meet, whoever has home field has a significant advantage.
And I feel like for the Yankees, home field advantage is so crucial. And it's not even the fact that, yeah, both teams get the short porch. It's playing in front of the crowd. I mean,
yeah.
For any team being home in a playoff, I don't have anyone that I know rather be the away team.
Yeah, I mean, both parks are heard ballparks, you know. Minute Maid doesn't have a short porch, but they have that tall wall in left field, and the ball carries well there, too. We saw how good Houston is at home. You know, those fans there, they suffered so much with, you know, bad baseball teams, and now they're all on board with these, you know, good teams back-to-back-to-back years. So it's a tough place to play. But we all know Yankee Stadium in October is probably the toughest place to play. So if you can secure that, you know, advantage, which Aaron Boone said he's not going to attack the bullpen. You know, he doesn't want to do this in case of injury, which is understandable considering the year they've had. But he goes, I still want that home field. And I know the Yankees are looking at the, you know, home field in the American League side of the playoffs, but you want that home field overall because that's big too. We know that they can now go into LA and they got confidence they could win there, but winning in New York is much sweeter.
Oh, yeah, especially when you're and you'd rather see them win. But also bad news for me. They have a half game top lockout spot. And Jose his wrist and getting surgery indefinitely. Will be back. Seen wrist injuries happen.
Yeah, those are hard to come back from because you got to rehab your swing too. You know, if you can't turn over that wrist comfortably, you can't hit.
And he hasn't had a great year compared to last year's series, almost an almost the ALN.
Yeah.
But that's a bad loss. And they're still fighting their half game lead.
Yeah, and that's one of the injuries I could actually speak to because when I was playing baseball, I did fracture my wrist also. And it's not fun when you have that just because of the pain. And I mean, I know in my case, they didn't fix it properly, so I can't turn my whole wrist over to this day. So, I mean, hitting doesn't, you know, it doesn't become easy. It becomes more of a challenge. You saw Judge struggle to get back. You know, when he did, swing's a little slow, your wrist is weaker, you have to work back the strength. So, they say 4 to 6 weeks, but that's the healing process. And you got the rehab process to get back to the professional baseball activities. That's a big blow. That really could put them, you know, on the outside looking come October.
Yeah, and then we've also dealt with the Carrasco with his cancer. So it hasn't been an easy year for Cleveland. But, they, I mean, they've done all right given the circumstances.
Yeah.
But next thing to talk about, and we briefly mentioned it before, is the Nationals swept the Cubs at Wrigley. And that was the first time they did that since 2005.
Big, big series one for them.
And for the Nationals, no, I think more than expect the Nationals after their horrendous start to be where they are right now. They have 4 games in the wild card for the top spot.
Yeah, everyone wrote them off once they struggled at the beginning and Harper was gone. So they said, oh, this team's not going to be able to come back. They don't have the pitching. They don't have the bullpen. But they've done a lot of this without Scherzer, too, who's been hurt for a good chunk of the second half. And you look at what Trey Turner has done coming back. You look at what Anthony Rendon has done, who will be a free agent this coming off season. They really turned their whole entire season around, and I wouldn't want to play them in the National League. You know, you can go Scherzer, Strasburg, 1-2 combo, and you got Patrick Corbin now at the 3-star. John Buda will struggle, and if they want to win in October, they're going to need a closer. But their lineup's hitting, their pitching's clicking. They're a good team. You know, but the Nationals do have a history where in the playoffs they failed to show up. So that's always going to be on their mind. And, you know, maybe Juan Soto is the answer. You know, he's a young kid. So maybe he'll step up and become that guy that gets the job done. Every team needs one of them.
You still have Rendon.
You know, you've got these guys that have been there before, and you hope that the ones that haven't can come through. But, you know, the National League has to navigate because if they finish in a wild card spot, you're going to wind up playing the Dodgers in the first round.
Yeah,
we've seen crazy things
happen. I mean, they made it to the World Series, but they haven't gotten it done as well. So you never know.
That hump in the playoffs, the National League, they've taken care of with relative ease.
We got a powerhouse team though in the National League. They just built that up for 191, which is 27, and Franmil Reyes before he left Cleveland, 27. So that's cute.
Hunter Renfro is having a great year, but yeah, the club record of 190 homers, it seems kind of low.
But this was just when they did succeed, they were all pitching.
Well, I mean, they had great hitters. Tony Gwynn that played them. They were average hitters, not home run hitters. So you could see it.
And then the last thing we'll talk about before we open the phone lines is Mike Trout is the greatest player ever play. And he's still, what, 20-something? 28, 29? But he has 42 home runs, which is career high. He's got 99 RBIs and OPS of 0.85. So me and Brendan a little bit, I'm trying to be biased, and but MVP award. You can call him and talk to us about this, but is Mike Trout automatically MVP or LeMahieu season MVP award? The definition of most valuable player is your team, it's in the success of your season, who knows? But Trout in the year has 293, he's got 42 home runs and RBIs, 648 slugging, and a WAR of 7 this year. LeMahieu's got a 3.3 batting average, 22 home runs, 87 RBIs, 531 slugging, and a 5.1. We'll get to that in a second. First caller. Welcome to Mondo. Hello. And he hung up. So anyway, we'll continue our talk. So he's got a WAR compared to Trout. In no way am I saying that LeMahieu is a better baseball player than Trout. I know there's a lot of things about this.
I do.
If Trout is just, their team just doesn't win. Obviously, he gives it his all for them to win, but they don't win. And let's see if this caller answers the time. Now he hung up again. This is cool.
Might be struggling with the Blog Talk radio system, huh?
Or he just keeps hanging up. Anyway, what do you think? You know, how should the league look at this? Where they have two awards, but in hockey we have the Champions League award. Like, should they have two separate awards? Because LeMahieu's been amazing, career highs in multiple categories, and the Yankees are in the top of the division. And Trout, who's insane, but he's just not making the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, the Angels are 63-70. So they're hovering around that 500 mark. And I don't think they'd be anywhere near that without Trout. I think that the year he's having is the MVP, even though LeMahieu is having a great year as well. You look at what he's done consistently, you know, the power numbers now are going through the roof more so than they were last year. And by the end of the year, he'll be at 300 also. I think that they should definitely have an award similar to the Ted Lindsay Award where it's a player's MVP because that's different. You know, in that case, maybe LeMahieu becomes the league MVP and Trout becomes the player's MVP. But since they don't, I think you look at it where it's the most valuable player. And we know where the Angels are without Trout. They'd be nowhere. And you look at what would Trout do for the Yankees if it was him instead of LeMahieu? Would they have more wins than they do now if they had Mike Trout over DJ LeMahieu?
Most likely, yeah.
So I think that he's more valuable.
I just don't like the fact that Trout could bat 400 and the team doesn't win. He's very valuable. I get that whole thing where he's most valuable to the Angels, but in the grand scheme of things, he's just not winning. That's why I think like LeMahieu, he's been amazing. And his team's winning and credit some of the wins to him and his defensive play. And just everything about what LeMahieu brings and why the Yankees should have home field advantage in the playoffs. Again, Trout walks every time he passes. You don't know what he's going to do. I don't know. It's just a complicated thing to talk about just because the Angels are best.
Yeah. I mean, LeMahieu's been the Yankees MVP, no question about it. And Trout's been the Angels MVP. But when I look at it, who's more valuable? I think that Trout's the most valuable player in baseball. So, I mean, when you look at Trout, he's the MVP. I mean, the year he's having, it's surreal. You got the RBI, you got the home runs, the average is still there. You look at him on the field, too. His WAR speaks for itself. He's just every stat category is there. And I think you got to give it to him, which it stinks because LeMahieu was having a great year. He's fallen out of the top spot in the batting title, but he's got a career high in home runs. You know, he's got 87 RBIs. He's slugging at a rate he's never slugged before, but still, I mean, you look at his slugging percentage, 531, then Trout's a 648, the full 100 points higher.
Again, the WAR.
Yeah, I mean, his WAR is there. Yeah.
How are you team? But this one first. Welcome to welcome. You're on the line.
Hello, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Hey, how are you? First time caller. So I know you guys started the show talking about Judge, and, but I need to talk about Mike Ford, guys like Tauchman, Cortez Jr., the guys on the Yankees that I'm just sitting here watching this amazing season unfold, guys you never thought would be contributing on a regular basis, not one shot, you know, but on a regular basis. And my fear here is that when the stars start coming back, guys like Betances, Severino, Stanton, somehow the chemistry starts to shift for these Yankees. And maybe there's a part of me that wants to see these guys that have been contributing all year be there and step up in the playoffs as well. But I'm just worrying about, do the Yankees keep it together with these guys coming back? Or do these superstars who are coming back need time to develop? They're not mid-season form necessarily, and it winds up hurting the chemistry. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think that's personally why you would put somebody like a Stanton, try to rush him back and get him in game action before September ends, because you want to see if he can do it. And if he can't, then there's no need to put him in the lineup, because like you said, Tauchman's been doing what he's doing. Cameron Maben's been the stud since he's gotten signed. And I mean, all these guys have contributed, but you are paying, you know, Stanton the big bucks, Betances the big bucks, Severino the big bucks. So these guys are the guys that you have to ride or die with. And I think especially pitching-wise, Betances and Severino are two guys that you need to have back. We talked about how bad happened, Severino kind of fixes that. And we talked about some of the guys in the bullpen that have struggled, you know, the lesser names. And Betances comes back, and now you got six or seven relievers that you can throw out there, and that would be dominant. So I think those two guys have to come back. And Stefan, what do you think about that?
I think the sad thing is that baseball is a business. And, yeah, Stanley comes back, you're paying a ton of money, he's going to play. But guys like Tom, you have to give him credit the whole year. And I can pay more. Do a better job than Stanley might have done in their spot. He's been very tough. Great for Sheldon. It's been a major storyline. And listening to the fans, I would say that Brian Cashman said that, you know, guys like Urshela are no doubt starting in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
He's a player like that's worked into that role. Tauchman's been great. He's been great. But again, with the amount of outlets that you have, especially when Stanley comes back, you can't see a chance, you can't see Edwin. That's when it gets tough. But it's good to see that guy like Urshela, who worked his butt off, and finally get a chance to play full-time.
Ford's also in a bad spot because they have two first basemen coming back. And, you know, Voit proved last year, and he's proved so far when he's been healthy this year, that he has power and that he can come through in some situations. And Encarnacion is somebody that's been there so many times and done it so many times that, you know, you can't not have his bat in the lineup. So Ford's been great. I mean, they wouldn't be where they are right now atop the AL without his contribution last 3 to 4 weeks. But those two guys, they've earned it. They've earned the right to play and come back without having to worry about Mike Ford. And if Mike Ford comes into the next, you know, offseason, and Encarnacion's not there, you know, he has the chance to become the backup first baseman, and the Yankees could officially get rid of Greg Bird. So I think that's what he's played for, is the chance at next year. But this year, you got to give Encarnacion and Voit that first base job back.
I know that we agree with our core that, yeah, you change the way that in the chemistry. You don't want to do that with the team that's been this good. Same with the Mets, guys like Cano come down, Jed Lowry, Nimmo. When they were on that role, you can't change that lineup.
Yeah.
The lineup's on fire. But, you know, it's different now with, you know, the Yankees, where they're so above everybody else that you want those guys to come back, you know, that way they can help you in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, we always talk about how Stan's more of a strikeout or home run type of guy. But, I mean, in the playoffs, you obviously can't win on home runs. But if he comes up with first and second, there's a chance for three runs. If Tauchman comes up with first and second, he's been good, but he's single. So that's one run. So in the playoffs, those three runs become more valuable. And I think that Stan's an MVP. You know, he's been in this league. He's done what he's done. And he's got to be the guy that you go with.
So follow-up question real quick. With all the injuries and everything, Boone hands down manager of the year in the American League. What are your thoughts?
Oh, hands down.
Yeah, he is. There's nobody in the American League that has been in the situation the Yankees have been in. And I mean, most Yankee fans, when I speak for the Yankee fan base, were ridiculing Joe Girardi when he was the manager, Aaron Boone last year, even some this year. But, you know, we talk about how the analytics department runs most of the managerial decisions nowadays, and Boone's been able to rally the guys, you know,
He's taken these no names and put them in the lineup and gotten the most out of them. So, I mean, the only other coach that you would consider is Minnesota's, but I don't think that they've done enough where it's, you know, that he could beat out Boone. So I think that Boone's the AL manager of the year.
And Aaron Boone got lucky where his team is just very good. The thing that he's doing this year with Cashman and these players, I mean, the only reason Boone's in this conversation is because the guy that's called up. So you have to credit them for Boone. But I think him, Boone being able to manipulate his lineup on a daily basis and put a winning team out each time, hands down, he's definitely MVP. Boone's the player that coaches.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. Paul Molitor is the Twin Tail coach, and he's done a phenomenal job there. But they've also, you know, struggled in the second half, and they had a big lead over Cleveland, 10-plus games, and now Cleveland's closing in on them. So I think that the consistency the Yankees have displayed with the ridiculous amount of injuries, Aaron Boone gets the AL Manager of the Year.
Thank you, guys. Wish you the best of luck. Hope the podcast continues.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Great question. Again, plays a major part. Teams that are on a roll. Teams that are on a roll want to pick things up. But again, the Yankees, have been on a roll as much in the second half as the first. So do I think Stanton might back out the team? I mean, yes, but only if he can. You won't know that.
He gets at bats. Yeah, I mean, we were at the game where he had his only home run this year. So we've seen he could produce.
Another call. Welcome, you're on the
show.
What is up?
Hi, this is
Hussein. Hey, Hussein, how you doing?
Good, how are you? I had a question about the Mets. Center fielder Warren McGarrett. You know, a lot of people are talking, saying best center fielder in the league, hitting like 400 since the All-Star break, Gold Glove. You guys think he should still play once McNeil's back, or?
Well, we were talking about this earlier. We think it's going to wind up being more of a platoon because, again, you have more guys and position spots available. But Lagares has been ridiculously hot. We all know how good defensively he is. So it's tough to take him out of the lineup at this point. But, you know, Nimmo's going to have a chance. You know, you look at overall this year, Lagares is batting 218. So, you know, he's on a hot stretch, but we saw the Mets hot stretch came to an end. Eventually you think he's going to go cold. So when he does go cold, now you have Nimmo and all these guys that can take his spot. So it's a good problem to have. You know, the Yankees have had it all year. The Mets are now starting to see it, that when you got these guys that step up and contribute, now you have multiple players that could do the job and you feel more comfortable that you could win ball games, especially in the National League when you could use a pinch hitter for a pitcher and you have to rotate your position players more carefully than you do in the American League. The Mets are in a much better position now than they were 2 or 3 months ago.
I think that he gets a chance right off the bat, but if he shows in his first games that he just doesn't have it, that's our no spot right now to play that game without the operation. Same with Lowry. If Lowry comes back, new games look awful. He just can't play because if he struggles, the team struggles, it's not good. So I think that he'll be platoon for a week, and then after that, Lowry's going to have to go with the other guy, and I would assume it would be Lugares, just because I don't think Nimmo's going to snap the end of things that quickly. But Lugares does a lot in fielding. His hitting's been better.
Yes,
so he's definitely a great player to have
on the pitcher. Yeah, I got one more question. I'm not much of a betting man. I don't know if you guys know me much, but I don't really throw down on anything. But one bet to win the World Series, who you guys got?
Win the World Series? All right, Napa.
Yeah.
Just a second. I don't trust the Yankees enough to completely bet on the World Series. And they can. I would probably say the Dodgers just because when their pitching hitting is off, and they have something that had really new walk a little bit, is that they are so much. Anytime they have a chance to walk off and come back to the game, I feel like the Dodgers can hear that they're walking off. It's not just one guy. Everyone that's gets called up this year.
Yeah, but they've done it against the Marlins, so I don't count it. Before the season even started, I said the Yankees and the Astros are going to meet in the ALCS, and whoever won that is going to win the World Series. And I'm standing by that. I do think it's going to be the Yankees, and I did bet on that, so I have to stand by that. But
all right, so we're going with the Yankees. Okay.
Yeah, we're going with the Yankees here. But I think that the Astros and the Yankees have the best chance, and I can't pick the Dodgers like Stefan did just because I've seen them the last 2 years. And I think that the AL, when you bring the DH into it, the American League's just too much more powerful.
Home field. Sure. Obviously, the AL gets home field, the Yankees get it. I think the Yankees are in a series, but the Yankees are still going to have to go play a top Astros team. And we've seen the Yankees a little silent against good teams. So if that happens, they're screwed. And I think that the Astros are going to get the
pen. Yeah, I would agree. So I think the Yankees, you think the Dodgers, we could both be wrong. Could be the Braves.
You never know. So if you're interested in playing one of those fixes, let us know. We know something. All right, thanks.
All right, thanks for the answers. Yeah, I mean, you can go back to the MVP debate if you want, because I know you think that maybe you should win it. But if he can turn it around and get out of this little season, because he did hit a little bit of a funk, then he'll make more in the case if he can finish closer to 340. But if Trout does get back to 300, and now he's sitting at 300 with 50 plus home runs, 120 plus RBIs at the end of the year, it's hard not to get
in. I want to see Trout play in the playoffs, and I feel like an MVP should be playing in the playoffs all the time. I feel bad for him. I really do. He's signed a long contract. He'll be an Angel until he retires, and we're on the East Coast. We really don't get – I mean, that's someone that needs to be on national television as much as possible.
Yeah, I mean, he really has, no October resume.
He did one wild card game.
I mean, that's crazy. Even Connor McDavid in the NHL, who kind of ruined his 10 years by signing that big a deal with the Oilers, he had a full playoff run, and we saw what he could do. So the fact that he doesn't have one – deep run at all. It's just crazy.
Well, Trout doesn't win the World Series in his career, which I don't see the Angels doing anything. If anything, everyone's
doing. They have a couple. But, I mean, again, they have no
pitcher. They got Ohtani to be a pitcher and a hitter, and he's pretty good when he pitched, but he's not pitching because he got Pujols, his contract go, and then he retired. I don't know. If Mike Trout doesn't win the World Series, he's already the best player, and he will be. But if he doesn't win the he'll be the best athlete of all time to never win a championship.
I would think so. But you also look at what you talked about, his war, right? And he's single-handedly the reason why the Angels are 63-70, which means they're not the worst team in baseball. They're not the worst team in LA, the AL. I think there's about four or five teams that are worse. So they can't even get the top draft pick now because Mike Trout is so good at baseball. And that kind of hurts them. It's like, you almost want him to stop being this good for 2 months. That way they can fall in the standings, get that type of play. Like, you look at the Blue Jays, they have Lagerer Jr., Bo Bichette, all these guys coming in because they were bad. They got rid of all their players, and then they were able to build. The Yankees didn't get that bad, but they still able to draft well and build. Houston was able to be so bad that they now drafted Bregman, Correa, Altuve, all these guys are there. It's almost like they need that to happen, but they can't have it happen because of how good Mike Trout is. And they're now forced to try to add big names. And, they added Josh Hamilton, Albert Pujols, but all these guys are past their prime, but not as good anymore. So they got to try to find diamonds in the rough. Somebody like a J.D. Davis on the Mets that's able to bat 300 for them and give them some consistency, because you already have the one guy you need. He's going to win you games. You just got to find pieces to go around.
When you look around all the other teams in the league, you have the Yankees, Aaron Judge, it's not like NBA where every superstar's on him, but there are players playing at the superstar level. Like, the superstar level player, a superstar. Look at the Dodgers, Bellinger, Seager. You have all these pitching has been great. The Angels don't have pitching, and they don't have young guys to try with them. It's really going to hurt them.
Yeah, I mean, that's the key, though. If you want to build a contender and you have a player like Trout where you're not going to get the positional talent that you want around him because of how good he is, you got to find the pitching. And you look at the Dodgers rotation, Ryu, Buehler, Kershaw, they've been really good, and they're going to be hard to beat. But that's another thing, that you look at the Dodgers winning the World Series, we got to see something from Kershaw. I mean, he's having a great year. But then in the playoffs, he struggles. And you looked at a big game last night, he only gave up 3 runs. But, the 3 runs were more than enough, because when you are in the playoffs, everything's tighter. And last night was as close to a playoff type of feel as you're going to see. You had the Yankees' best pitcher against, one of the best pitchers in the last 10 years. They're in L.A. LA fans are smelling that series win. The Yankees need that series win. And he gave up 3 solo home runs, and Herman was able to find his groove and settle in, and that was the difference. So if Kershaw's going to give up 3 runs a game in the playoffs, I mean, you'll take that. But at the same time, you got to be able to match up against the other pitcher, and that becomes a struggle.
Don't quote me on this. I'm pretty sure I saw this stat yesterday that Kershaw joined 2 or 3 other players in the league to go at 11 and give up 2 home runs or more in a start.
I could tell you Verlander is one of the others.
Yeah, Verlander is one of the ones. I don't remember who the other one is, but that's crazy. And just shows that you know, this year, like, you know, home runs are just the absolute score runs. In a pitcher like Kershaw, against a team like the Yankees, you can get burned.
You're hit. Yep. Yeah, I mean, you're going to get hit. And it didn't take him long to make a mistake either. And LeMahieu deposited that first one, hanging curveball. Judge, hanging curveball. It wasn't a curveball that forced it. I don't know if it was a fastball or slider, cutter combination, but he deposited that into the seats. And I mean, you look at Herman, and what impressed me was that he was able to give up a solo home run to lead off the game after having the lead early. He then gave up a double and was able to work out of it. And that's the type of thing you need in October.
Well, yeah, definitely was like a part this year. I mean, you know, again, this time with closer and closer, it should be exciting, especially for the Mets. You know, the Mets are an asset. That's a great season. It's a great series coming up. The Yankees have to play well again. They're going to Seattle, a very bad. And you want to see the Yankees get, and you want to see the Mets make the playoffs. That's what you want to see. But honestly, you think that World Series would be sick.
I would love it. I mean, a lot of stuff has to happen, but I would love it.
There's not a huge chance that happens. But again, the Mets have to get in, and then the Mets can go farther than the Yankees. You never know. What we'll get to, you just get it.
I mean, listen, as this weekend goes, where they beat the Cubs 2 out of 3, and Philly and Milwaukee lose a couple of their games in their series, the Mets could be sitting in that second wild card, at least tied with it by the end of this series. So,
If they sweep the Cubs, they're
tied virtually, because I think Philly or Milwaukee will win a game. But if they take 2 out of 3, they'll still be 1 back of the Cubs, and that's a better position than you know what they're in right now, especially since they're beating a team in front of them. And we talked about Philly and Washington in their division, so they'll have that chance to you know get at them and chip away at the lead. So they're not out of it. A lot of teams are not out of it yet. And it's going to be a fun last couple of weeks. And we'll be here on Mondays 12-1 to talk about it, and we'll talk Yankees, Mets, and everything else around the league. Thank you to our callers today. We look forward to speaking with you guys again next week. Thank you.